And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, December 3rd, 2015. I'd like to start off by asking you to have a pencil and paper handy because you might want to take notes about URLs, email addresses, web pages, maybe names, addresses, telephone numbers, someplace that you might want to get to later on and take action. Let's get started. The Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Buffalo are still absent here in the Hebgen Basin in Montana. Patrols are conducting daily reconnaissance, searching for the buffalo's migration corridors, but the gentle giants are keeping themselves out of Montana and consequently safe from hunters. Along Yellowstone's north boundary, in the Gardner Basin, buffalo haven't been so lucky. Another 8 buffalo have been killed by Confederated Salish and Kootenai hunters who are harvesting ecologically extinct wild bison because they have the treaty rights to do so. We would suggest that the Confederated Salish and Kootenai and other tribes who hold treaty rights in Yellowstone region also have the right to healthy, viable populations of wild bison on federally unoccupied, unclaimed lands. And we would further suggest that the Interagency Bison Management Plan, which is driving the destruction of America's last continuously wild buffalo herds, is not only violating the lives of wild buffalo, but violating Native American treaty rights as well. Most of the recent killings in Gardner took place right outside Yellowstone's boundary at Beatty Gulch, which is a tight bottleneck corridor that the buffalo attempt to use to make it to other lower elevation habitat in the Gardner Basin. Hunters typically line up and wait for the buffalo to cross the line from Yellowstone, where they can then be shot. Hunters and bison managers are aware that bison will seek the assumed safety of the park when groups are shot in this area. We have frequently seen hunters shoot into large and small groups of buffalo here, and the buffalo's response has been to turn around and flee into the park. This, according to Yellowstone, causes hunting not to be effective at killing enough, which in turn triggers Yellowstone's response to initiate capture for slaughter operations. At the last Interagency Bison Management Plan meeting, some tribes had agreed to occasionally withhold from hunting right at the park boundary to enable at least some buffalo to migrate to other expanses of habitat. Of course, these buffalo would still be pursued and eventually killed by hunters. And the Kootenai, Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes, who have killed the most through hunting this year and in years past, also hold an agreement with Yellowstone National Park to ship buffalo to slaughter. Since the Confederated Salish and Kootenai also ship buffalo to slaughter, it's not really in their interest to allow the buffalo to move further into the Gardner Basin. Buffalo Field Campaign's Gardner patrols have also reported that hunters from other tribes hunting under treaty, who normally start their seasons later in the winter, going into early spring, have been arriving in Gardner. With Yellowstone threatening slaughter, hunters are anxious to kill as many buffalo as possible before capture and slaughter begins. For the buffalo, it doesn't matter if they cross the park boundary or not, as they'll likely be killed either way. The killing of the buffalo, whether it's through hunting or slaughter, is all part of the Interagency Bison Management Plan, which was crafted for the benefit of livestock interests in Montana and not buffalo. Even those hunting under treaty rights are being used by Montana's livestock interests and consequently the IBMP to facilitate the destruction of the buffalo and prevent them from restoring themselves in Montana and elsewhere. Whether the excuse for these fatal tactics is brucellosis or population control, neither are based on reality as they both only serve political agendas. The Interagency Bison Management Plan exists because Montana livestock interests sued Yellowstone for allowing wild bison to migrate into Montana and because of a law crafted by the livestock industry, MCA 81-2-120, which places the Montana Department of Livestock in charge of managing wild bison. One industry's intolerance is driving a national treasure towards the brink of extinction. We know you care deeply about wild bison, and one of the single most important things you can do is to help repeal this law. For more information, visit the Buffalo Field Campaign's website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And they have lots of information about becoming a volunteer and working in the field. If you have any questions, give them a call at area code 406-646-0070. That's 406-646-0070. If you have a donation for the Buffalo Field Campaign, send it to P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. That address, once again, the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, the zip 59758. And once again, their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org, where you can find all this information and more. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And here's a further story. Montana mulls restoration of bison from Yellowstone herds. In this story by Laura Zuckerman, with editing by Daniel Wallace and Lisa Von Ahn, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. The shaggy offspring of United States' only wild purebred herd of bison are pitting Montana conservationists, federal wildlife managers, ranchers, and Native American tribes against each other. Montana Governor Steve Bullock is due to decide soon whether bison from Yellowstone National Park will be allowed to roam across the state outside certain tribal lands where their recent return was seen as a long-awaited homecoming. The saga centers on a push by environmental activists and Native Americans to increase the numbers of the iconic beasts, which were once almost wiped out, against opposition from livestock owners who fear disease and say recent bison deaths on tribal lands may have been caused by mismanagement. There are nearly 5,000 bison, also called buffalo, in the park, which spans parts of Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho. They represent the last of ancient herds that once thundered across the U.S. West in the tens of millions. The U.S. government's efforts to exterminate remaining herds to force the surrendering of warring tribes that depended on buffalo resulted in fewer than 50 bison finding refuge at Yellowstone in the early 20th century. The tribes revere the Yellowstone bison, which are a top draw for the record number of tourists flocking to the park. Wildlife advocates also prize the animals for their genetic purity, since they were excluded from an otherwise widespread practice of crossbreeding with cattle. Yet debate over the bison has raged for as long as the remnants of the nation's wild herds were guarded by the U.S. cavalry at Yellowstone and saved from extinction. Montana ranchers fear the bison because they can carry a bacterial disease, brucellosis, that can cause pregnant cattle to miscarry. Stockmen in the state have long supported a program that allows the capture and eventual slaughter of many bison that migrate from the park into Montana in the winter. The practice has protected the state's brucellosis-free status, which allows producers to send cattle across state lines without expensive testing, but it has also prompted public opposition. A park proposal earlier this month to cull 1,000 bison drew such controversy that the U.S. government put the move on hold for now. James St. Goddard, spiritual leader of the Blackfeet Nation in Montana, said the bison should not be crowded into trucks and then killed like any livestock. Our ancestors depended on bison for survival, and now they depend on us for their survival, Goddard said. We should be fighting for their lives. Two Indian reservations in Montana have in recent years received brucellosis-free bison as part of a government experiment designed to test whether quarantine animals could be kept from being exposed to or carrying the disease. State officials have since asked for public input on proposals that could establish herds created from Yellowstone bison elsewhere in the state that could include public lands, private property with permission of the owner, or additional Indian reservations. The questions about the fate of such herds arose this summer when 19 bison cows, including one that was pregnant, died of what appeared to be water deprivation at Fort Belknap Indian Reservation in north-central Montana, home of the Gros Ventre and Assiniboine tribes. The deaths were a blow to residents of the reservation, who are still shaken, said Mark Azier, president of the community council that represents both tribes. Azier said he feared ranchers and other opponents of bison restoration efforts would use the incident as evidence that tribes should not receive more buffalo. The deaths, apparently caused by factors including a heat wave and the failure of a gas-powered well pump, are red flags for Montana's leaders who have voiced concerns about increasing the conservation herds. Wherever those bison go, said cattleman and state representative Kelly Flynn, we have the expectation that they will have the best treatment they can get. At the very least, food and water. And the Japanese whaling fleet has set to sea for hunt despite international anger. In this story by Elaine Lies, editing by Sanjeev Maglani, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Japan's whaling fleet set out for the Antarctic on Tuesday to resume a hunt for the mammals after a year-long hiatus, prompting criticism from Australia as well as key ally, the United States. Japan aims to take more than 300 whales before the hunt ends next year, and nearly 4,000 over the next 12 years as part of a scientific program to research the whales. The International Court of Justice ruled last year that Japan's whaling in the Southern Ocean should stop, and an International Whaling Commission panel said in April that Japan had yet to demonstrate a need for killing whales. But Tokyo retooled its plan for the 2015-16 season to cut the number of minke whales it intends to take down to 333, two-thirds below their previous hunt. Last year, regrettably, the city of Shimonoseki, that is home to the whaling fleet and part of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's election district. There's nothing happy about this day, he told the fleet's crew at a ceremony prior to their departure. Shortly before noon, the ship sailed away under a clear blue sky, with family members and officials waving from the shore. The hunt is expected to last until March 2016. Japan, which has long maintained that most whaling species are not endangered and that eating whale is part of its food culture, began what it calls scientific whaling in 1987, a year after an international whaling moratorium took effect. The meat ends up on store shelves, although most Japanese no longer eat it. Officials, including Abe, have long said their ultimate goal is the resumption of commercial whaling, a pledge Abe repeated in a message read at the pre-departure ceremony. Australia and key Japanese ally, the United States, both opposed the hunt. We believe that all of Japan's primary research objectives can be met through non-lethal activities, and continue to oppose their scientific whaling program, said Russell F. Smith, the U.S. Commissioner to the International Whaling Commission. Environmental activists also condemned the move. It is completely unacceptable for the Japanese government to ignore the International Court of Justice, said Junichi Sato, Executive Director of Greenpeace Japan, in a statement. This is not scientific research. This is straight-up commercial whaling. And disease-free devils are being transported back to their Australian highland home. In this story by Pauline Askin and Jill Graylow, editing by Richard Pullen, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. The largest group so far of disease-free Tasmanian devils has been released in the wild as part of plans to save the carnivorous marsupials from a cancer threatening them with extinction. A group of 22 of the creatures, made famous by their namesake Warner Brothers cartoon character, was flown to the island state of Tasmania from a captive breeding facility near Sydney, Australia, and released in native bushland. The Tasmanian devil population has plummeted to around 10,000 from an estimated 250,000 prior to 1996, when the devil facial tumor disease was first discovered. The disease causes large lumps to form around the animal's mouth and head, making it hard for them to eat. Tasmanian devils in the wild have been absolutely decimated by this disease, said Mike Drinkwater, operations manager at the Devil Ark Recovery Program, in a comment to Reuters. It's a very, very nasty disease. After 3 months, we see symptoms. After 6 months, those devils are gone. Devil Ark, part of a national breeding program to save the species from extinction, has 180 Tasmanian devils in its program, making it the largest disease-free population in Australia. The healthy animals will be protected by devil-proof fencing and other deterrents to prevent contamination from diseased animals. The group of 20 of the marsupials was released in the state's north earlier this year. The Tasmanian devil is the world's largest carnivorous marsupial, reaching 30 inches in length and weighing up to 26 pounds. They were named by European settlers who witnessed their ferocious teeth-bearing displays and spine-chilling guttural growls when attacking their food. And SeaWorld will sort of end their theatrical killer whale show in this story by Lori Weisberg and Jennifer Van Grove of the San Diego Union-Tribune, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Next year will be the last for the theatrical performances, and coming in 2017 will be what SeaWorld Entertainment describes as an entirely new orca experience designed to take place in a more natural setting. The announcement made recently by senior SeaWorld executives is part of a multi-pronged effort by the Orlando-based company to refocus the public's attention on its conservation efforts while also growing revenues and stabilizing its business. CEO Joel Manby, who joined the company in March, was short on specifics as to what the new orca shows will entail. He did stress, however, that the planned overhaul was not conceived as a way to appease its critics. "We start everything by listening to our guests and evolving our shows to what we're hearing, and so far, that's what we've been hearing in California. They want experiences that are more natural and experiences that look more natural in the environment," said Manby. "But it's not universal across our properties." In a bid to boost attendance, which in San Diego plummeted 17% last year, the company said it would bring a new, very marketable attraction to the Mission Bay Park, although no details were offered. The new attraction will mean shelving, at least in the short term, a $100 million plan to nearly double the killer whale tanks at the San Diego Park. Manby said the company will redeploy one-third to one-half of the $100 million for the new attraction. "We haven't had a good attraction there in a while," he said of SeaWorld San Diego. The move comes amid efforts in both state and federal level to clamp down on SeaWorld by ending the captive breeding of orcas. SeaWorld has already vowed to fight a recent ruling in the California Coastal Commission to bar it from breeding its orcas as a condition of moving forward with the tank expansion project. Recently, Representative Adam Schiff of Burbank said he planned to introduce federal legislation that would prohibit the breeding of captive orcas, end the capturing of wild orcas, and stop the import and export of killer whales. "We know with the regulatory environment out there with orcas and what's happening in California with their reputation, we'd be foolish if we didn't look at options," Manby said. "We're not comfortable putting $100 million into a market where there are regulatory questions. Until that whole issue settles, then we'll make a decision at that time." As SeaWorld Entertainment moves towards revamping the iconic Shamu show, it's unclear whether its other two namesake parks in Orlando and San Antonio, Texas, will follow suit. Theme park consultant Dennis Spiegel said he believes it's inevitable. "You can't do it at one park and not do it at the other park," said Spiegel, president of Iowa-based International Theme Park Services Incorporated. "That's not the way our industry operates." In totality, Spiegel and SeaWorld's presentation amounted to getting back to basics under new management. "They're going to listen to their guests and continue to react to them, and they're not going to overreact to antagonists." SeaWorld parks, most notably the one in San Diego, have been seeing declines in attendance over the last year, following the 2013 release of the critical documentary Blackfish, which has aired repeatedly on CNN and brought negative publicity to SeaWorld. The company has fought back with a prolonged media campaign defending what it says are the park's humane practices, and that effort will continue, SeaWorld said. "I'm not a little surprised that they will open to pulling the plug on the orca show, but I think it's smart, and I think it shows that the new management team is willing to put everything on the table and tackle some of the taboos that the prior team was unwilling to address," said James Hardiman, an analyst who covers SeaWorld for Wedbush Securities. The move, though, is not likely to silence its critics who want to see an end to captive breeding. Across the three SeaWorld parks, there are 24 orcas. 11 of them are in San Diego. The decision by SeaWorld to phase out killer whale shows in San Diego is a welcome step along the path towards ending the captivity of these magnificent creatures, said Schiff. "Much more needs to be done, however, and I would urge the company to curtail the breeding of their orcas and partner in the creation of ocean sanctuaries. The fact still remains that as long as SeaWorld holds its orcas in captivity, the physical and psychological problems associated with that captivity will persist." People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, SeaWorld's most persistent critic, repeated its call for an end to breeding of orcas in captivity and urged the parks to build sea sanctuaries for the marine mammals. "An end to SeaWorld's tawdry circus-style shows is inevitable and necessary, but it's captivity that denies these far-ranging orcas everything that is natural and important to them," said PETA Foundation Director of Animal Law Jared Goodman. Some visitors to SeaWorld San Diego said they would be upset if the park eliminated all orca shows, but a toned-down show might meet with less resistance. Christine Saponara, 35, a city planner from Los Angeles, arrived at SeaWorld late Monday and expressed relief that SeaWorld was backing away from its traditional orca shows, adding that there are too many signs that killer whales are both highly intelligent and are suffering in captivity. She held out hope that SeaWorld might come up with a way to show orcas in a more natural environment. It's a good thing, she said. Maybe we can see things in a more natural way. Key to SeaWorld mission going forward, company executives said, will be reminding visitors that its marine parks of its long-standing efforts to rescue injured and stranded animals. Towards that end, the parks will work more with public schools, the company will renew its Saturday morning TV show Sea Rescue, and will develop a possible new rescue-themed ride that would mimic the work of its real-life rescue teams, the company said. SeaWorld also wants to focus more on transforming its theme parks into resort destinations, beginning with a partnership with San Diego Evans Hotels to develop a SeaWorld-branded hotel on existing land already leased from the city of San Diego next to SeaWorld. The coming changes follow a modest turnover in the company's financials, with earnings during the third quarter rising 12%, while revenues were largely flat. Company-wide, attendance dropped 4% last year and 0.4% for the quarter ending September 30th, a drop largely due to much steeper declines at San Diego and Texas parks. The company's planned transition to a much different killer whale show marks yet another milestone in the Shamu Stadium performances, which changed significantly following the 2010 death of Don Brenshaw, a trainer at the Orlando park who was drowned by a 12,000-pound orca during a performance. Since then, trainers never returned to the water for the park's iconic Shamu show, despite a four-year battle waged by the company to overturn federal citations and fines stemming from Brancho's death. And Native Americans are opposed to stripping protections from Yellowstone grizzlies. This story by Laura Zuckerman, editing by Dan Whitcomb, Tony Reinhold, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Native American tribes are calling for the U.S. government to halt plans to strip grizzly bears in and around Yellowstone National Park of Endangered Species Act protections because it would open the way for trophy hunting in Idaho and two other states bordering the national park. Government bear managers have said the 700-plus grizzlies in the Yellowstone area have exceeded their recovery goal of 500 bears and no longer need federal protection. But more than 40 American Indian nations have formed a coalition called GOAL to oppose delisting the animal they consider sacred and central to their religious and cultural traditions. They are arguing that allowing hunters to kill them and either make them into rugs or mount their carcasses for display is abhorrent. Grizzlies in the lower 48 states were formally listed as threatened under the law in 1975 after being hunted, trapped, and poisoned to the edge of extinction. The law broadly bans killing of protected creatures. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service may float a proposal that would allow Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana to manage bears that wander from Yellowstone into those states. Ranchers and sportsmen in the northern Rocky Mountain states support removing grizzlies from the federal list of endangered and threatened species, or delisting, claiming the growing number of bears in and around Yellowstone poses a threat to humans, livestock, and prized big game animals like elk. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, an Interior Department agency, has been negotiating with the three states about management of the bears should they be delisted. Tribes say that required consultation with them has been minimal or non-existent, infringing on their sovereignty and violating federal trust responsibilities. They called for an indefinite halt to delisting. The Department of Interior needs to institute a moratorium on the delisting of the grizzly bear until proper consultation is addressed with each affected tribal nation respectively, so that we can get better solutions for the future of the grizzly bear and of our people, Lee Juan Tyler, vice chairman of the Shoshone-Bannock Tribes of Idaho, said in a recent statement. Fish and Wildlife Service officials could not be immediately reached for comment, but a spokesman said that recently that the agency had consulted with the five tribes at that point and had planned a webinar and conference call in the near future. And Zambia has busted a South African wildlife smuggling syndicate from the African Wildlife Foundation. Zambia Wildlife Authority's Intelligence Investigations Unit officers have successfully intercepted a group of men attempting to illegally export 12 live Zambian sable antelopes by air to South Africa. Unfortunately, 5 of the sable died as a result of stress during the journey. The group of suspects included 1 Zimbabwean and 6 South African men who were caught attempting to load the animals onto a specially adapted light aircraft at a remote airstrip. The passenger seats of the 12 to 14 seat aircraft had been removed and water troughs had been installed for the animals. The men are currently being held in custody in Zambia and have appeared in court charged with various offenses, including illegal possession of prescribed trophy animals, which carries a sentence of 5 to 10 years in prison. The operation resulted from complex intelligence gathering conducted by the Intelligence and Investigation Unit of the Zambian Wildlife Authority. Last month, one Zambian sable antelope bull was reportedly sold at auction in South Africa for $1.96 million. The successful bust of this wildlife smuggling syndicate has attracted significant attention to the value of Zambia's wildlife and the serious measures being taken by ZAWA to bring wildlife criminals to justice. This success demonstrates the dedication of the ZAWA officers conducting dangerous but vital work to tackle cross-border illegal wildlife trade. The operation was partially funded by Game Ranchers International Wildlife Crime Prevention Project and highlights the need for continued support to this essential wildlife crime unit. Game Rangers International receives support from the African Wildlife Foundation for its efforts to combat trafficking of wildlife and wildlife parts in Zambia. And for more information about the African Wildlife Foundation, please go to their webpage, www.awf.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening for Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of this program, please tune in tomorrow afternoon, that's Friday, to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM or www.freakradio.org at 3 o'clock for a rebroadcast. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, please tune in to Radio Free Moscow 90.3 KRFP at about 1:15 p.m. on Wednesdays, right after Democracy Now!, to hear the Earth First Update. Or you could go to the website radio4all.net. That's radio, the number 4, all.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous Earth First Updates. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.